know about the passing of Rabbi Goldberg, so I would want to the learning to be Lila Nishmaso. Happens to be about Moshe Rabbeinu, so Moshe association. Moshe Tzvi ben Yitzchak Halevi. Okay, so we're talking about Moshe and the construction of the completion of the construction of the Mishkan. Take a look, please, at source number one from Pekudei. People say you can't find a Dvar Torah on Pekudei. It's not true. There's a lot to say on Parshas Pekudei. So, Vayi b'chodesh harishon b'shana hashenis b'achol l'chodesh. It is the first month. It is the first month of the second year. In other words, the Jews have now been in the Midbar for almost a full year. It is the first of the month, the first of Nisan. So it's 1 year since HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Hu kam ha-mishkan. The Mishkan is put up. Vayakim Moshe as ha-mishkan. So Moshe puts up the Mishkan. Vayitenas Adonav, he puts the Adanim in place. Everyone who learned Vayakel and made it through Vayakel knows already what Adanim are. Those who decided that they're going to start Maver Sedra will like say Vayikra. Oh, I wish you luck.
I thought about it on Shabbos. I really did.
Okay, let me be clear.
Okay, actually, because you said that, I had some time this weekend. My husband has this little Maver Sedra thing that has each pasuk written twice.
That's perfect.
Yeah, but it was really tough.
I really find that superfluous that you have Chumash where they actually put it in twice in order to Maver Sedra.
No, but it's
really
because it's a tiny little thing, and he keeps it with him, and he could just
I do want to say to be clear though, because someone actually heard the audio recording of the sheet. And asked me, am I saying that women have a chiyuv of Maver Sedra? I am not saying that women have a chiyuv of Maver Sedra. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you want to know Torah, though, this is a smart thing to do. You could make the argument. The Magen Avraham believes that women are obligated in Kriyas HaTorah. And there's a view that Maver Sedra is a function of Kriyas HaTorah. So you could actually make that argument. But I don't think posts can generally do. We generally assume that you're exempt and it's just something you should do. Anyway, Adanim are the bases for the boards. The boards that you have vertically running around, they're based in these copper/brass/bronze foundations. Those are the Adanim. So Moshe puts them in place. Vayasam as Krashav, and he puts the boards in. Vayitain as Berichav, as well as the beams that run horizontally across. And Vayakim as Amudav, and he puts up the posts. So Moshe is putting up the Mishkan, and that's already odd. What's odd about Moshe's role here?
A little bit old.
Sorry? A little old for it. Okay, what else?
I think it's Bezalel, the leader.
Well, Bezalel is really the coordinator of the construction. He's a subcontractor.
Right, Moshe.
But you had all these other people.
Yeah.
Why is Moshe doing it, especially when? What else did Moshe do for the construction of the Mishkan? What other role did he have?
Made the menorah?
Nope. Although we have the idea that he's shown... Right, so there's some discussion about that, because Hashem tells Moshe, v'zeh ma'aseh ha'menorah. But if you look at the psukim, what other role does Moshe have? Nothing.
So we don't have
zero. Moshe has nothing else in the construction of the Mishkan, and suddenly at the end, we're going to have him do the grunt work. Right.
It's not wrong work. It's the elders of the shul, they put the foundation when you're starting.
No, they don't. They have an honorary shovel and they pose for a picture.
Yes, well, that's what he's doing. He's doing lab.
No, that's not what he's doing. Look what he did. He put the foundations in place. He put the posts in the foundations. He took the cross beams.
Yeah,
right? These massive.
And everything is like, hey, Moshe just put it here, and he went like this.
I don't think so. No.
No.
No. And the Medrash is bothered by this clearly, and it offers a fascinating narrative to explain what Moshe is doing. But once you see the Medrash, then you have a whole host of other questions. So look at source number two from Medrash Tanhuma.
How do you say that he was out of Kamoso and he was like the infinite behind it?
Totally. You could totally do that. Watch what it says. Moshe made Zerah Shalom Nishtate Fui Mahen B'Melechas HaMishkan. Moshe is upset that he doesn't get to join in with creating the Mishkan. He says, after all, look at what happens, right? The gifts are given by the Jews. They all donate the materials. The work is done or coordinated, really, by Bezalel Aliyav and done by the Chachmei Lev, the people who are given the special wisdom that they can know how to do the various types of crafts needed. Ulefishai Moshe made Zer, and because Moshe is upset, Hashem hid the way to put up the Mishkan from everybody. No one could figure out. They didn't have the IKEA manual. They didn't say A, B, C, or whatever it is. And so they don't know how to put everything together. It really is hard to understand. He told them, here's your base, and he told them, they're named for what they are. He told them this to be vertical. Like, how hard is it?
It seems much easier than IKEA.
It really does. But that's what it says. It says they didn't know how to put it up. So, Kevin Shitichu Penehem, Mikomakom, Veloha Yuchon Mahamido. So, you know, they've done everything they can possibly do. They're upset. They don't know what to do. Nichnasu Kol Yisrael Lefnei Moshe. They all go to Moshe. Amru Moshe Rabbeinu, Koma Shemartalanu Asinu. They say, Moshe, we did everything you told us to do. Vechoma Shitzibisanu Litenu Lahotzi Natanu. We gave everything you told us to give. Nahanakol, we did everything. We gave everything. Very kol hamalacha lefanecha. Here it is in front of you. Shema chasanu shum davar o vitarnu al kol hashamarta lanu. Did we miss anything? Did we do anything extra? Why doesn't everything fit together? Re'ei hakol lefanecha. See, it's all in front of you. Vehumar lo kol davar v'davar. And they showed him everything. How do you know that? The pasuk says so. Shnemar vayaviyu es hamishkan haMoshe. The Torah says they brought the Mishkan to Moshe, and it goes on to enumerate all the different pieces. So they bring the whole thing to Moshe, and luchsiv vayar Moshe es kol hamalacha. The pasuk says Moshe saw everything they had done. So Amar lo, they said to him, lo kach v'kach amarta lanu lasos. Didn't you tell us to do it this way? Amar lo, he said, yeah. V'chein al kol davar v'davar. And so too with each thing they showed him. Amar lo, v'im kein lama eno omeid. So knew, what did we do wrong? Sharei Karnit Staru Bitzala Lahaliyah Bachokach Melev Lahamido Veloha Yicholin, because Bitzala Lahaliyah and all the Chachamim are standing there trying to put up the Mishkan, and you know, it's not working. It's just not it's not going. This actually reminds me of the one of two Rashi jokes that I am aware of. It was actually told to me by Jesse Kaplan's grandfather. Told me this joke. It's about, I have to make sure to tell it properly. There's a young yeshiva guy who gets married, and they're going to have their first sukkahs together, and he wants to build a sukkah. He wants to know, how do you build a sukkah? So he asks his rabbi, and his rabbi says, go look at this Rashi, and he gives you all the instructions. So he opens up reads the Rashi, says, okay, I know what I'm doing, goes to get materials, follows all the instructions, puts it up, gust of wind comes along, collapses. Can't figure out what he did wrong. I followed Rashi to the letter, goes back, learns the Gemara, learns the Rashi, puts it all together. Again, gust of wind comes along, blows it down. Happens a third time. He goes back to his Rebbe, he says, I don't understand. I did everything that Rashi told me, and yet it collapsed. The Rebbe says, yeah, Tosos asked that question. So, that's not going to have as much meaning here. But it's a good joke. But in any case, that's one Rashi joke. I can tell you the other one later. Since that one went so well. So, the other one you'll like more. But in any case, that's what happens here. The Jews go to Moshe, and they say, like, why won't this thing work? By Moshe Meitzer, we're in the middle of number two. By Moshe Meitzer al Davar Zeh, Moshe's upset. Shalomel Hakadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, until Hashem told Moshe, Lefisha Yisa Meitzer, Shalai Lacha Asiyah V'Lochelik Mevlechas HaMishkan. You were upset, Moshe, that you didn't have a role in creating the Mishkan, right? Chayla says, Well, Shluchah Shalom Kamoso, your Shaliach is like you, your agent is like you. Moshe, you did do it. And maybe Hashem would have been happy with that, but Moshe's not happy. He says, I didn't have a portion in the actual physical work. Lefichach, lo yachlu ozen chachamim la'amido, bishvilcha, kedei sheyedu kol Yisrael, she'im al yadcha eino omeid, shuv eino omeid le'olam. He says, this way everybody is going to know that it has to be Moshe to put it up, and if it's not Moshe, it's not going to stand. Hashem says, that's why they can't put it up, because I wanted you to be the one to do it. Ve'eini kosev lo hakama ela al yadcha, and therefore, I'm not going to write that anybody put it up other than you. Shinema, like the pasuk we read, Vayakim Moshe HaMishkan. Moshe is the one who makes it stand. And so the pasuk says that Hashem told Moshe, you're the one who's going to put up the Mishkan. Amar Moshe, Ribono Shel Olam, Eini Yode La'amido. But Moshe says, I don't know how to put up the Mishkan. Like, what do you do? What goes where? Amar Lei, so Hashem says to him, don't worry about it. Asok biyodecha, v'atamar la'amido. I want you to just do things with your hands, make it look like you're, you know, putting up the Mishkan. But we may love and it'll stand on its own. Vani, kose valecha, sha'ata, kimto. And I'm going to write, don't worry, Moshe put it up. Shenamar, and he quotes the pasuk. But it was first month, second day, first of the month. Hukam ha-mishkan, what the Midrash is picking up on is subtle. Or not so subtle, but it says, hukam ha-mishkan, which means the Mishkan was put up. And then it says, vayakim Moshe et ha-mishkan, Moshe put it up. Why is it in passive voice it was put up if you're telling me that Moshe put it up? The answer is Moshe looked like he was putting it up, but actually God did it. It just went up.
It's like the menorah.
Yes, like the menorah. So now we've answered the question of what role did Moshe play, and we've offered an explanation for why Moshe is doing this role of putting everything up. The answer is he wants to do something. He wants a physical role, manual labor. Someone's honking. Or someone's car alarm. I don't know. Okay. Sorry.
Moshe wants to do something. Right, so that makes everyone forget, and then he's not even really doing anything.
Right. So
is it dangerous?
So one problem that you have here is the, as there's a lot of points out, there's no role for him. He didn't actually do it. So, it's not mine. So,
if anyone parts on this, it's off.
Okay. Okay. So one problem is, if you're going to give Moshe a role, let him actually do it. Right? Especially when you consider that Hashem gave everybody else their abilities. Right? We said that for all the other ones, I think I brought it actually as one of the sources on here. Did I bring it? I brought it actually in at the end of the sheet, the last source, number 14. The Torah says regarding Bezalel and Aholiyah, Ulahoros Nasan Belibo. Right? Hashem put it in his heart. Hashem gave him the knowledge to be able to do it, him, Bezalel, and the Holy Av, and it continues, Mileo Sam Choch Maslev, he filled them with knowledge of the heart, with the information for how to do this, trained him as a craftsman to do that, all the different work that needed to be done. So why couldn't you give Moshe training? Teach Moshe how to build it. Why is Moshe doing it but not doing it?
Maybe it's like the concept of being partners with Hashem in creation, that like, it had to be joint, like the same ways as like Hashem and the parents make a child, that it had to be.
So there should be a partnership. Hashem does it and Moshe does it. Okay, it's a good approach. What else?
Like it had to be something very spiritual, like it couldn't be fully understood like that to show that it's like a living aspect, even though it's a physical dwelling.
There has to be a spiritual aspect to it. Also could
be. But the pasuk is very specific that he put in, you know, like the sockets and the beams and the boards.
Yeah. So
it sounds like Moshe was putting.
Well, either that or he's moving everything into place, and that's what it's describing him doing. But you're right, it sounds like he's engaged. But I have a different problem
It's called foundation, though, right? So I feel like what he's doing is the actual beginning of the foundation. So I feel like it makes sense that Moshe, who's so spiritual, will be at the essence of the building of the Mishkan.
Right, this role in particular is suitable for him.
As opposed to the finishing, like the
creation
of it.
Right, although it seems like he's going to do more as it goes through. Yeah. But the other piece of it that's difficult is, why does Moshe need to do this at all? Why does Moshe have a need to engage in physical labor? Like, what is it about that's going to attract a Moshe? Yeah.
So like the same way you have like the captain of an army go out into war, like to be the first to lead that, right? So you have Moshe, who's the leader of basically Bnei Yisrael, like building this spiritual place for.
But then why doesn't he actually do it? Why is it?
That's not because the captain wants to do it. He wants to get his troops getting like inspired.
So this is more
personal. Right. So, right, the answer really.
He wants to do it himself. Right. Because he wants to.
The answer really could be, I mean, I want to separate out the two questions. In other words, the question of his motivation may be, you know, he wants to do it for this reason, and then Hashem rewards him for some completely different reason. But the idea that this is Moshe's personality, and it's true that the role of a Jewish king is always to be engaged and involved. The king has to lead the nation out to war. There is that sense of you have to be involved. My only problem would be then why is he doing this at the end? Because it really is the end. Everybody's made everything. Everybody's donated everything. Now he's just walking in Parshas Pekudei, and doing this. But again, that wasn't really his choice. Right, that wasn't really his.
But I like what Rizal said before. I feel like, you know, when a donor of a building, the building comes and then they invite him to put up the mezuzah or something, it signifies like it's coming back, like it's them. It's they're the ones who. Didn't you see that Rizal before? Like something with elder, like.
That he concept. Gave the commandments, like he gave the instructions out, didn't he? Like, so he got up there, made the announcement, said this is what everyone's got to do. So he sort of. He was in charge.
Right. Well, that's the thing. He had a role, but he wants manual labor. There's something that he wants to
maybe do. It's hard for him because the Mishkan is really the role of the Kohanim, and he's not going to really do anything.
Oh, so he doesn't get to be a Kohanim. But Levim do have a role. Levim carried all this stuff. Levim, Gershon, Kasim, Murray, their families carried these things from place to place when they traveled, yeah.
It's all about physicality. Like, that's what all the mitzvahs are. And maybe he's showing the service of the Mishkan and the future based on Mikdash. It's all physical, but really the physical is the spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Could be. These are all valid and valuable answers. I don't think any of these are wrong. And all of these have been, you know, offered as, you know, Dibrei Torah at one time or another. Don't get me wrong. I think you're right. I think there are other elements of this, though. And there are additional concepts which are important to grasp. So I'm going to add to what's being said without disagreeing with it.
But also, why did the mentor have to be so fanciful? Like, why did they have to come up with this whole, like, convoluted story of what happened? Like, why is it so bothersome the way it is?
Well, what bothers you when it is convoluted?
That it's
there's
this, like,
mystical
element, but it's not natural, right?
Because it's trying to answer a couple questions. First, why is Moshe doing it? Because he wasn't meant to. Why does it say who comes?
Right. See, part of this is Midrashic style in the sense that Medrash Tanchuma is different from, let's say, we spent a lot of time in the earlier parts of Chumash Mos reading Mechilta, Halachic Medrash. Mechilta is very terse. One sentence, two sentences, and you're done. Medrash Rabbah is more wordy, story-oriented in general. It certainly draws on more of Tanakh than Mechilta does. Medrash Tanchuma is canonized later and is much more verbose. Because really, you could have said this Medrash in two sentences. And if this Medrash had appeared in Medrash Rabbah, it would have been in two sentences. The Medrash would have been bothered by, why is Moshe doing this, and why does it say Vayakim versus Hukam? It may have told you that it's bothered by that, or it may not, and just expected you to understand it, and it would have said to you, Moshe puts up the Mishkan, he was upset until now, God left it out of what the people could do, and said, Moshe, you're going to pretend to do it, and I'm going to finish it. And that's what all it would have said. But Medrash Tanchuma is more verbose, that's just the way it's written. So you get
this. You're going to pretend, and then it's really going to be done by me? Like an afterthought, like, oh, because you're upset, so we'll do this.
Well, it's a pasuk which said, Hukam, instead of Hayakim Moshe.
Right.
That's really what they're picking up on. So let's offer a couple of possibilities. First, what Moshe really wants, I would suggest first, is a role in terms of manual labor. Physical work has value. And this goes back to something we said last week, when we talked about the mirrors and the kiyor, right, and Moshe's horror at incorporating something so physical in the Mishkan. Moshe lives in a less material realm. He's the one who goes up Har Sinai, spends 40 days there, doesn't eat, doesn't drink. You know, that's who we're talking about. He's the one who separates from his family. Moshe is not. He's not someone who engages in the physical in general. I brought you a Gemara in source number 3. I referenced it last week but didn't have it on the sheet, about him and Bezalel and the order of creation of things for the Mishkan. The Gemara says, Bezalel al shem chochma so nikra. Bezalel was named for his wisdom. What do you mean? B'shah she'amal HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, lech amor lo l'Bezalel haseli mishkan aron v'kilim. When Hashem said to Moshe, go tell Bezalel, make a mishkan, make an aron, make the implements, in that order. Halach Moshe, b'hafach, Moshe reversed it. B'amar lo, he said to Bezalel, as you find in the Chumash, asay aron v'kilim u'mishkan, make an aron, make kelim, make a mishkan. Amar lo, he said to him, Moshe Rabbeinu, min hakol shel olam, adam bone bayis, ve'achar kach machnes l'socho kelim. He says, Moshe, the way the world works is that you build a house, and then you put the items inside. Ve'ata omer aseli aron ve'kelim mishkan. You're telling me make the aron, make the kelim, make the mishkan after. Kelim shani osel, echan achnisem. Where exactly am I going to put all the things I made? Right? You're telling me I should make an aron and just leave it there? I mean, it doesn't rain in the Midbar, fine. And the man, I guess, will just fall around it, so you don't have to worry about the man falling on it. But it's not right to just make an aron and leave it in the middle of nowhere. So, Shemakach Amalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bezalel says to Moshe, could it be that God said the following? I say, Mishkan Aron Bekelim, make the Mishkan first. Mishkan, when I say make the Mishkan, let me just make sure that's clear to people. The Mishkan itself, when I say the Mishkan, what we mean is the boards that went around it, as well as the cover that went on top of it, the hides, as well as the woven cover that went on top of it. That's what we mean when we say Mishkan. So he says, that's where it should be. Mishkan first, then Aron and Kelim. Omar lo, to which Moshe said, that makes sense. Shema Bitzel Kel Hayisa V'yadata. Maybe you were in the shadow of God, and therefore you knew. Sale, Kel, Bezalel. That's the idea. Now, this Gemara is what might be called, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this. Okay, you can't use the word wrong. That's not allowed in this sentence. But the problem is, when did they put up the Mishkan? We know, because we just read it. No. Pekudei, after everything was made.
Right, they didn't
later. They didn't do it the way the Gemara says. The Gemara says, he says to him, put up the Mishkan, and then we'll have a place in order to put the Kelim when we make them. But that's not what they did. They brought everything to Moshe all together. So I don't really follow what's going on in this story. I don't, there's something wrong here. I just don't know what
it is. Also, it's like the Bezalel's telling Moshe, like, you heard that.
Well, that's the other piece of it that's really difficult to grasp. Take a look at source number 4. The Maharal tries to smooth off that rough edge on this Gemara.
I have the question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Inside of the Mishkan, it was completely dark with, like, all covered.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay.
And so it was just burning fire inside, like, a tent?
Made of not like
carpet. I don't care.
Right, so the answer is that you have to have some system for venting whatever fume you have from the menorah, as well as other means of illumination that may have been present. Meaning it wasn't just the menorah. The Gemara in Shabbos, like Chaf Aleph or so, asks, has Hashem say to the Jews, you should know the menorah is not for me, the menorah is for you.
Right.
God doesn't need the menorah. After all, the Jews travel by a pillar of fire that Hashem provides. So God doesn't need the illumination. It's you. When the menorah is for the sake of your honor, that it's there. And that fits the wording when the Torah introduces the mitzvah of menorah.
Was it a very high ceiling?
So, yes.
What about all the things from the burning of the
your crush, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Messiah, where'd that go? I always thought the Mishkan was open.
Right,
and when it rains,
no, it's not. The Kreshim. The Kreshim are 10 amos tall. The Kreshim are 10 amos tall. You're talking 15 feet. Yeah.
It's so high.
It's higher than that.
It's a high ceiling. They were shorter in those days.
They had to walk up on a ramp.
Sorry.
Like inside, they went up.
There's a ramp for the Mizbeah, but it's not that tall of Mizbeah.
What about all the fumes from the burning of the Kabbalah?
It probably stank in there, all the blood that they sprinkled everywhere.
Okay, so we are really going to move on here. Not because it's not an interesting question, but because I don't have a better answer. What rain? You're in the Midbar.
I don't think it followed the laws of natural.
Wait, hang on. back up. The Mishkan in Israel is a different structure. The Mishkan, once they establish a Mishkan in Shiloh, it's actually a different structure. It doesn't follow all the rules of the Mishkan they've been traveling with in the Midbar. For example, it has stone walls instead of having a instead of having these boards. Well, the Mishkan they build in Israel is not the same structure that they used in the.
And is it not covered? It's open.
So you do have open areas in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't get a description of much in terms of the Mishkan itself, but I would have to assume that you have something open. I mean, the Israelis did this, so there must have been a way to do it. I just don't have the details on what was going on. But take a look at the Maharal, who tries to explain how Bezalel is going to correct Moshe. He says, Yesh lomar de Moshe hayam matim es hakelim, da'arei hakelim hem chashuvim min ha-mishkan. He says, you could say that Moshe puts the kelim, the implements, first, because after all, they are more important than the Mishkan. They have a higher status. V'yesh lahatcha be'ikar, you start with the essence. Al-Benyan Hamaseh, but when you're dealing with practicalities, doing things, yesh lahatim es ha-Mishkan, you should make the Mishkan first. V'nesh ha-Mishkan u'shmirat ha-kelim, because that is where you protect all these implements. Ulefichach Bezalel, asher hayam amun ala maseh, ba'ilav ha-yediyah lasas ha-Mishkan kodem. And therefore, Bezalel, who's in charge of doing things, gets the knowledge that the Mishkan should be done first. Ava Moshe, the Mamuna al Halimud Bilvad, Moshe is in charge of the intellect of study. Hayodeh Siyor Mishkan, he knew the design of the Mishkan. Vizil Halimud Ech Yitzaveh, and that was the study that informed him when he instructed everybody, Hischabakelim Tchila. So he gives the instructions based on what's more important. But Bezalel says, that's fine, when I talk to the contractors, you know, they're making it in a different way, because it doesn't make sense your way. But I said it nicer. So that's, you know, that's our general picture of Moshe, is that Moshe is the intellect, and Bezalel is the one who's going to be hands-on, he's going to do things. But that just pushes the question. So why does Moshe want to engage in manual labor? Why is he moving out of his zone? But there's a lot to be said for the value of physical exertion, and I want to present it on four levels. First of all, the idea, very simply and straightforwardly, I thought I had brought a source for it on, but I'm looking at my notes, I don't see one, so I'll just say it outside of that, and that's that it's like a car run. Physical strength is finite and exhaustible, right? I mean, you could argue that people get tired also of thinking, right? Thinking drains your blood sugar levels, this is true. Nonetheless, physical strength is considered to be like you do the work and then you're exhausted and wiped out. You've given God something. And so maybe that's what Moshe wants. He wants the feeling that he did something. That's his gift to Hashem. One possibility. Second possibility is that it's about personal growth. Take a look at number 5, please, from the B'nai Machshava Tov, Rav Clonimus Kalman Shapiro, the Pia Zetzner. He writes, V'hine lefi ha'emes, avodas ha'machshava tzricha lahaskel milamata lemala. He says, when you serve Hashem with your mind, it has to start from below and work its way upward. What does that mean? Mitchila yitayer es gufo, va'az machshavas memela titar v'tischazeg. First you purify your body, and then your mind will be influenced by that to be purified and strengthened. Veloshi yaskal adam machshavas arishona. You don't start with your mind first. You have to have discipline in relation to the material. And that's important for him. B'nai Machshava Tova is his guide for creating a community of people dedicated to the service of Hashem. It's fantastic. It's really important reading. I highly recommend it. It's published, I think, in the beginning of some editions of Eish Kodesh. I think they may have B'nai Machshava Tova. So when you're done with Matur Sedra, you can, you know, look at that also. But the idea here is that physical exertion builds discipline. And maybe that's what Moshe wants. Maybe that's what he is looking for. Possibility.
Like the idea of Nasa Benishma, right? We'll do it, and then it becomes part of it, and then you'll...
That's interesting. I haven't thought about it that way, but yes. The Nasa influencing the Nishma. Good. Third possibility is part of proximity to Hashem. Because the very first thing we know about Hashem in the Torah is that God is a creator. Right? That's the first thing we know about Hashem in the Torah. So much so, the Nachash says to Chava, eat from the fruit, and v'yisem kelokim. You will be like God. And Rashi comments, source number 6, what does that mean? Yotzrei Olamot. You will be creators of worlds. I feel like I must have mentioned this idea at one point here, that that fits the punishments they get.
Why does eating from the tree make you a creator?
Because the snake is trying to get them to eat from the tree, so he promises them what they want. Whether it really can do that or not, whether there's any connection between Da'at Tov V'ra and actually being a creator of worlds, is fodder for many different Torah. But it could just be the snake is just trying to tempt them into eating it. But it fits the punishments they get. Hashem says to them, you want to create worlds? You will. But not get rich quick, you know, you ate from a fruit and now you're able to do that. So, Adam, you're going to bring life into the world from the ground. But it's not going to be easy. You're going to sweat, you're going to plant one thing and something else is going to come out. You're going to have to deal with thorns and nettles and all of that. And Chava, you're going to bring life from your body. But also, it's going to be pregnancy, it's going to be labor, it's going to be all of those things. It's, you want it to be a creator of worlds, and you will be. But you're going to have to work at it in order to get it. That's the payoff. But the point that I'm bringing it here for is simply that Hashem is a creator. That's what it's about. So much so that when the Torah says that Hashem invests them with the ability to create, take a look at source number 7. Ramban says, "Kol ish asher nisa'o libo, all those whose hearts elevated them." It's talking about the craftsman who did the work. The Torah doesn't say those who gave the materials, that they also had their hearts elevated. It just says they were generous. When the text says those whose hearts elevated them to draw near to do the work, because none of them had training. When they were slaves in Egypt, they weren't making gold statues. That wasn't their job. They were making bricks. So none of them come into the Midbar with the means of weaving and spinning and forming and sculpting. Only Shemin Behemiyot of Klal. There was no one there who had any training whatsoever. And yet they found in their heart, I know how to do this. And that person was then elevated and came before Moshe and said, I can do this. The point being, what Ramban is saying, is that Hashem makes them creators. Hashem invests them with creativity. Which leads to Rav Soloveitchik's statement.
How did Hashem decide who to give that kind of chachmasu?
Good question. You could suggest, based on the psukim, those who really had a desire. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like there are people who want to, and Hashem completes it for them. But Rav Soloveitchik is famous for saying that creativity is a way to emulate Hashem. In his view, and I brought you here the translation from Halachic Man, from Professor Kaplan, who did the classic translation, he says the scriptural portion of the creation narrative is a legal portion, meaning when you read Bereishis, you're not reading a story. You're reading halacha. How is that? What does that mean? I read Bereishis Baralakim, I'm reading halacha. He says it's a legal portion in which are to be found basic everlasting halachic principles. If the Torah then chose to relate to man the tale of creation, we may clearly derive one law from this manner of procedure, that man is obligated to engage in creation and the renewal of the cosmos. When we are taught to emulate Hashem, start from the beginning of the Torah, where Hashem creates, and you should be creative as well. That's the idea of Halach to Bidrachav, you are imitating Hashem.
That's what the Shabbos and the Mishnah Malachos.
What do you mean?
That you should rest from creating, and creating were Malachos.
Yeah. So how does that connect here?
I'm just saying that Shabbos is like a resting from creating.
Right. But why should I refrain dafka from those acts that Hashem inspired me to do to emulate Him? Like, I would think those are the ones I should continue. If you're emulating Hashem, then it's Hashem halted, so you halt. Okay, good. Actually, that was my shiur from Midrash at Yom Rishon a few weeks ago, was on this topic of why it is that, what makes a Mishkan breaks a Shabbos. I think there's a lot to be said, but that's certainly a good idea with it, and it's going to take me where I'm going next, so it's even more helpful. What we have so far are three levels to why Moshe would want to exert a karban, right? It's his gift to God of his exhaustible resource. It's for his own personal growth. It's for proximity to Hashem. Hashem is a creator and I am going to create. But I think there's another element, which is when you do physical labor, when you have that as a skill, when you have that as an option, it makes the spiritual labor more valuable, more meaningful. In other words, to put it differently, when you have somebody who decides that they're going to learn in Kollel or become a teacher or a rabbi or whatever it is because that's the only thing they know how to do, so what else were they going to do, right? They needed to do something, so fine, they did it. When you have somebody who had training to do something else or talent to do something else, and they said, you know, I want to devote myself to this, that's a choice that they're making to not do X but instead do Y, that's more meaningful. That's what I'm proposing here. And I think that's what, you know, what Moshe is doing here with physical labor makes his spiritual work, makes his communication with Hashem much more valuable. We find that regarding Shabbos. I'm not going to ask you what the common denominator is in number 9 between all of those psukim that I just quoted. But I will note for you source number 10, because that will tell you. Ibn Ezra writes, when the Torah says, Sheshes yamim ta'avod, right? 6 days you shall work. That's what appears in all of those psukim. 8 times in the Torah, with slight variations in wording, the Torah says, 6 days you shall work, and then you stop on Shabbos. So Ibn Ezra gives it the classic read, which is, it's not a mitzvah, you have to work for 6 days, do malach for 6 days, and then stop for Shabbos. He believes that it's rishus, and that's a standard take. But take a look at source number 11.
It doesn't sound like rishus at all.
It doesn't. If the Torah says 8 different times, you shall do work, you have to wonder. So take a look at number 11. Sorry? If you're a Vilna Gaon, right? The Vilna Gaon says there is a mitzvah of eating matzah each day of Pesach. Tamidim of Gura say Allah ilas matzah.
But we hold that you don't have
we
to.
We hold you
know. It says you have to, we don't have to.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It just means if you're going to eat a bread, if you're going to eat a grain thing, it's going to be matzah. Right. That's why we usually take it, and that's why Ibn Ezra takes this. And I can't disagree with him as a matter of psak. You couldn't tell somebody that there's a 614th mitzvah that is go get a job. They like to sometimes. But take a look at source number 11.
Well, why not be anywhere?
Well, it's malacha. It's malacha, right?
Learning to malacha.
Good. Hang on with that question. Take a look at number 11 first. Take a look at number 11 first, really. The Sheshes Yamim Ta'avod. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe Yehuda said, Hare Zu Gezerah Acheres. He says that's a separate instruction, meaning separate from the mitzvah of Shabbos is a mitzvah of work for 6 days. Shekashem Shenistavu Yisrael a mitzvah asachal. Shabbos Kach Nitzavu Al Hamalacha. Just like we were commanded, stop for Shabbos, we were commanded to do malacha. And then you get these three other statements. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Gedola malacha, Shalosharsa Shechina b'Yisrael, Ad Sha'asu malacha. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, malacha is so great, physical labor is so great, and the Shechina was not manifest on Bnei Yisrael until they did malacha. V'asuli mikdash, make a mikdash for me, and then v'shachanti b'socham, then I will dwell in their midst. Rabbi Akiva Omer Gedola Malacha, Sharei Nenah Shava Pruta Min HaHekdesh Maybe Me'ila V'Chomsha Umaybe Asham B'Shtei Slaim V'Apolin Shayosim B'Hekdesh Nolin Scharon Mitrumas Halishka. Rabbi Akiva says, you know, if somebody benefited inappropriately from the property of the Beis HaMikdash, they had to bring a karban, they had to pay what they got and extra back, but the workers do the work for the Mishkan and they get paid from Hekdesh, from sacred items. So you see the value of malacha, that it enables them to get, to benefit from that which normally comes at a high cost. And then finally, Rabbi Shimon Omer Gedola Malacha, Sha'afilu Kohen Gadol Nichas B'Yom HaKippurim Shalom B'Shas Avodah Chayiv Misa. Rabbi Shimon says, the Kodesh Kadashim, Holy of Holies, no one gets to go in there. Only the Kohen Gadol, on Yom Kippur, with a special service, then he gets to go in, and otherwise, Misa. and yet Bishas Avoda, when they're working on the Kodesh Kadashim, not only can anybody go in to do the work, but even he holds a Tame, someone who's impure, can go into the Kodesh Kadashim to do work. A Baal Mum, a person who's blemished, is allowed to go in to do work. Sorry?
You know? What work are you talking about?
Repairs. If repairs needed to be done in the Kodesh Kadashim, they would put them in and they would do the work.
So it's all about that.
It's only, well, no, no other presence is allowed there. You can't go in some, you know. Unless they said cleaning was needed in order to take care of it, then you could. But their point is, this is of special value. Is this highlights the value of physical labor. Yeah.
If you don't have any physical labor, then really, like, what's Shabbos?
Right.
There's no resting from anything.
Correct. So this was something developed by Rabbi Menachem Mendel Kasher. He developed this idea quite a bit in the 20th volume of his Torah Shlema. He talks about that a lot. And what he suggests is also seen in this Medrash Avos Rabbi Nachman that I brought you in number 12, is that your davka is supposed to do malacha on Friday to show that resting on Shabbos is special. Take a look at number 12. He says, Ehovis Hamalacha, Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, you're supposed to love malacha. Chayav Adam Lios Ohevis Hamalacha Ba'osik B'malacha. One must love malacha and involve himself in it. And look at this. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Rabbi Eliezer used to say, Gedola hi malacha shekashem shenitztav Yisrael ala Shabbos kach nitztav ala malacha. Just like we were told to keep Shabbos, we were also told to do malacha, like that pasuk. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Gedola hi malacha shekola gozlas chaver shavapruta tzarech leilich achra afilu lemadai. Poel shayosim balabayis bekosavos afilu achas mein yafadiner ocha veino bo. She says, you know, Rabbi Eliezer says, malacha is so great that normally you take anything from somebody else, you're punished, you have to pay for it, and you have to follow the guy to the ends of the earth in order to track him down and pay for it. Whereas, if you're a worker, and you're working, let's say, with kosavos, with dates, you're allowed to eat from them as you're working. The Torah says explicitly, the worker in the field is allowed to eat from whatever he's working on. He's not allowed to put it away in his bag to take home, but he's allowed to eat while he's working, because we value malacha. Va'odai Rebbe Omer, and Rebbe also said, Gedola hi malacha shafilu adam chatzer ogina charevim yelech v'yasuk v'hem k'deshe asuk v'malacha. Rebbe says, you know what? Even if you have some ruined yard or garden, and you don't need to go there, you don't need to be involved, you should do it, just to involve yourself in physical work. And the last part is the best. Maisa Rabbi Yoshia, story with Rabbi Yoshia, one of the Tanoim. Shahaya Mefana es Kalev Me'erev Shabbos im Chashecha, Bibayezel Abayezel, Mizaviyazel Azaviyazel. Rabbi Yoshia had a practice that on Friday afternoon, as it's getting dark, Shabbos is starting, this will resonate, I suspect, with a lot of people, he was moving stuff from one house to another house, from one part of the house to another house. He wasn't relaxed as Shabbos was coming in. He's running around as Shabbos is coming in. Amrulo, his student, said to him, Rebbe, our master, Lamata Osaka, why are you doing this? It's not like, it wasn't even work. He wasn't doing something practical. He was just running around. So Amalem, he said to them, Kedesha Tavor Aleinu Shabbos, so that Shabbos will come upon us. Shnemar Shabbos Vayinafash. Hashem halted and rested. So that's the practice in my household, is that down to the wire, we are doing it because God did it and Rabbi Yoshia did it. So here's my basis. Anybody bothers you about it?
Yeah.
Abbas Rabbi Nasa.
No, but now, like, whenever something happens, they want to add on to Shabbos, start Shabbos earlier. So
right.
It goes against it.
No, it doesn't, because starting Shabbos earlier is fine, but work until that moment when you start it. I mean, look,
always those beautiful stories of people that were sitting and waiting.
Yes, yes, there are such stories. I believe that such people exist. No,
they could work afterward. Like someone actually told us, your house should be calm on Friday.
Yes, people always say that.
Set your people for tonight.
I'll never forget.
I don't think I'm calm. You could still be working in a calm state. It doesn't need to be like...
Right, that's true. Do you know the veils? Are we usher and Devorah veil? The veils?
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
Okay, so at the Bayit, between Rabbi Tal and Rabbi Karapkin, Rabbi Vail was the interim rabbi. And I remember vividly him speaking at one point and talking about Fridays, and he said that he and his wife had a practice of taking a nap on Friday. you how jealous I was.
There's a whole movement that was started by somebody somewhere, which is like taking over that people are. It's called like something they finish by Chatzos on Friday.
I mean, there is a halacha that you're not supposed to do malacha on Friday afternoon. Let's be clear. Yeah. Other than that which is needed for Shabbos, you're supposed to finish your malacha. You're not supposed to do malacha from a certain point on Friday afternoon. It's basically the last 2.5 hours of the day.
Yeah.
Other than what's needed to prepare Shabbos. Sorry.
It's turning on the hot water for Shabbos.
That's okay, because it's your shower for Shabbos.
So what are you not allowed to be doing?
So it means that if I'm preparing shiurim on Friday afternoon, it means I have to stop 2.5 hours before Shabbos, close the computer, and get involved in cleaning the house and laundry and whatever else needs still to be done.
So that means that when Shabbos comes in at 4 o'clock, like everyone needs to be leaving work at 2.
No, not on halacha.
But that only applies to you for someone else.
Sorry, I didn't hear that question.
It only applies to you for someone else. Shabbos, they would be allowed to be the last.
Yes. Yes. That's true.
It's not their business.
That's true. The point is that the focus really should be on Shabbos in those last couple of hours. It shouldn't be on all the other stuff. Yes, I know. I think I can safely say I know better than most how hard it is to do this. At the same time, I don't want people to come away from what we're seeing here and say, oh, so it's really good. I can keep on doing my work up until the last moment, and I have a foundation for doing so. But what we are seeing here is the idea that Shabbos becomes more meaningful.
Absolutely.
If you're stopping malacha.
Well, the more work you do, the more you love Shabbos.
Exactly.
Yes. No, it's you don't have an appreciation of Shabbos when you're a kid. It's only once you have like real responsibilities during the week, and then Friday night you just say to yourself, "There's nothing I can do about it, so just put it out of my mind." I remember when I was I went from smicha straight into my first shul. And I remember vividly one of my first Friday nights during Lecha Dodi thinking, wow, this is great. Like, all these things that are in my head on Friday that I can't, you know, that now I just, there's nothing I can do about it. Just leave it be. Forget about it. And yeah, that was a grief. I had not understood until then. Rabbi Kasher applies this on a completely different front. You know, there's a classic debate about what to do about the international dateline in halacha. If a person goes to Hawaii, a person goes to Japan, what's the, you know, when do they keep Shabbos? There are those who argue you keep 2 days. If you go there from a place where this day should be Shabbos, but where they are, they're observing a different day, then you actually keep 2 days. Rabbi Kasher said you can't, because you've gotten rid of Sheishes Yamim Tavod. You've eliminated the 6 days. There are other reasons not to do it. But that was an interesting argument that he made. So applying this to our discussion, maybe Moshe wants to engage in malacha, because that makes all the other spiritual things that he's doing, makes them more valuable. It makes it more meaningful. He communicates with Hashem, because he has this physical work as well, and now he's holding his physical, and he's going to go do his spiritual. That's all one idea. I have two other things that I want to make sure to get to, and I see that we're running low on time, but as you can see from the source sheet, these are there's time to handle the other parts. I have a second idea for what Moshe wanted here, and it's not about the work. The language in that Medrash Tanchuma was interesting. If you go back to the beginning of the of source number 2, Haya Moshe Meitzer, Moshe was upset. Al shalom nishtatev hu imahen bimlechas hamishkan. Not necessarily that he didn't build the mishkan, but that he didn't join with everybody else. Now, it was already suggested, I think it might have been Dasi who said that, you know, he's supposed to lead with everybody, he's supposed to be engaged with everybody, and so there's that element of it, but I think it's more than that. There are few people in Tanakh who are more isolated than Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He grows up in Paro's palace, away from everybody. As an adolescent, or he's 13, he's 20, however old he is, he flees to Midian, where he marries Tzipora, a woman from a family who are pariahs in Midian, right? They're having trouble there. They're getting chased away by the well and so on. And then Moshe returns from Midian to a nation that doesn't really want him. Right? When he goes to Paro, and Paro says, I'm going to double the workload, the people say, go back to Midian. We don't need you here. You're making things worse, not better. Leave us to our slavery, right? And then, you know, Matan Torah, you think is going to be Moshe's chance to sort of rejoin the nation. Now they'll teach them, and they'll get to know them, they'll get to know him. But he comes down from Har Sinai, and he discovers the Egel, right? He had the Levian kill the people who were involved in the Agel, and then he's distanced from everybody all over again, because he has to be a judge, he has to order the execution, but he's also a physical outsider. Take a look at source number 13. Umoshe yikach es ha'ohel, the first line in there. Moshe takes his tent, v'natalo michutz l'machaneh, and he moves it outside of the camp. Harchek min ha'machaneh, he's far away from the camp. And he calls it the Ohel Moed, and anybody who seeks God goes out to the camp. Moshe is physically away from everybody else. He even has to wear a veil. Right? There's a veil that he has to wear to cover his face because the people cannot endure his radiance when he teaches them. Sorry? Masveh. Right, Kikaran, or B'nai Moshe. That's the reason, because of the radiance, not horns. But yes, it's the end of Parshas Kisisa. That Moshe wears a veil.
Here it makes it sound like the Ohel Moed is Moshe's personal tent.
It does. There's a lack of clarity as to that. I'm going to come back to it in a moment. He's even distanced from his family, right? He separates from Tzipora. But the Mishkan, building the Mishkan, provides a way for Moshe to join the people. There, in his first Ohel Moed, which is Moshe's tent, that's the first line in number 13, so it's outside the camp. But now Moshe has a second Ohel Moed, which is the Mishkan. And where is the Mishkan located?
In the middle
of the camp. All the Shvatim are camped around it. You take a look at the second line in number 13. Ve'chas hanon es Ohel Moed. The cloud covers the Ohel Moed. This is the second Ohel Moed. Uchvod Hashem maleas ha-Mishkan. Hashem's honor fills the Mishkan. And Moshe can't go in right away because the cloud is on it. That's the place where people go in order to commune with Hashem, and that is in the middle of the camp, and so Moshe is back in. And maybe that's what Moshe is looking for here. He wants not just to be involved in the physical labor for all the benefits that that brings, but he wants the opportunity to join the people in their Kedusha. They're all building a Mishkan, and Moshe wants to be a part of that process.
But he doesn't really get that.
Right, he never really gets it. Next week, this is Rosh Chodesh Adar, so next Thursday, God willing, is Moshe's yard site. That's one of the hallmarks of Moshe, is that for as wonderful as he remains an outsider.
Even in the Mishkan, he doesn't go and work with them. They all don't know what they're doing, and then Moshe comes by himself.
Right. True.
Did I ask a question, or were you talking about this?
Sorry.
Did I ask a question, or not? Okay,
let me finish the verse, The last part here. Why doesn't Hashem let Moshe do this? We already read number 14 in the beginning, right? Hashem invests others with their abilities. He gives Bezalel the means. He gives Aliyah the means. Why doesn't Hashem do that for Moshe, right? And if Hashem wants to have Moshe do the concluding job, he takes it away from Moshe. Does Moshe just pretend to do it? Like, what does that even mean? He didn't give Moshe the ability in the beginning, and now at the end he has Moshe pretend. Not to mention, wouldn't it have been better for the Mishkan to actually be built by Moshe?
But then he could have destroyed.
So you could make that suggestion. They say for Moshe entering Eretz Yisrael that he can't go in. That's what you're referring to, right?
Yeah, that's also
if he goes in, he'll build the Beit HaMikdash, and God won't destroy it. Could be.
Yeah. That's our thing. Like, it was really for them. They were the ones who needed it.
Moshe doesn't need it?
I mean, could think that maybe...
Yeah, it's an interesting possibility.
Why did Hashem give him the chutzpah? Why just do, like...
Yeah.
Because he's the ultimate issue that the world is really just a very spiritual one, and everything is from Hashem. It's the issue that even, like, when we think we're doing something, it's not really us, it's really Hashem.
Could be. You can definitely give that answer. So Moshe is allowed to but not allowed to in order to show there's a barrier. Could be. I want to float an idea which I think is important in many other contexts, and we're running out of time, so I'm going to float the idea. Even though these other answers are good, but I think Klal Yisrael needs multiple types of leaders. It's not good for us to have Moshe be Bezalel. Right? You end up with a situation in which if Moshe is the only one entrusted with building the Mishkan, we're never going to trust a leader like Bezalel, because he's not Moshe, right? Somebody who can do the physical things, someone who could run this sort of a Mishkan campaign, Bezalel Ahaliyav, anybody who's gifted in what Maharal calls the Olam HaAsiyah, the world of doing, we're going to look at them and say, yeah, but you're not Moshe. And I don't just mean you're not Moshe, because no one's Moshe, but you don't excel as a spiritual leader, so therefore you can't be qualified to lead us physically. It's like you have the hierarchy of Dayanim, of judges, right? If Moshe is the way he is in the beginning of Parashas Yisro, the only judge who can manage all the cases of the Jews, and all the Jews have to stand there online to be heard by Moshe, that's a disaster. Because every time you need a Dayan in the future, it's always going to be, well, he's not Moshe. I can only be judged by Moshe. And even again, even if you'll say, well, no one's Moshe, I can only be judged by the greatest judge of the generation. I'll never go to anybody else. You need to establish a hierarchy of others in order that people should understand you don't have to be Moshe. There are different models of leadership and there are different levels of leaders. And if you're going to demand that, the leader has to be a Moshe, it's just going to be a disaster. That doesn't work. And you can see it in Tanakh. Best example may be Ezra and Nehemiah in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. Both leaders, simultaneous, there's a lot of debate among historians who was there first, not important for right now. We find them together at the end of Sefer Nehemiah. But Ezra is a teacher of halacha. He's an enforcer of halacha. He creates takanos, enactments. He leads public gatherings to promote Torah. But Nehemiah is the one who harnesses the population to build the wall of Yerushalayim. He creates a system of civil defense for the city, revolutionizes the economy. He compels 10% of the population to move to Yerushalayim. That's Nehemiah. They're two different people. If your only leadership model is assigned to the man of God, the people will never accept Nehemiah. They'll love Ezra. Ezra in the Gemara is seen as a sort of reincarnation of sorts of Moshe. He also is a reincarnation of Aharon, if you follow Chida, but that's a whole other discussion. But Ezra is the new Moshe. So number one, that places an unfair burden on Ezra. But also, no one will ever accept Nehemiah. You need others. It's not enough to just have a Moshe. And so maybe that's the deal. Hashem starts off the construction with Bezalel, with Aholiyah and the people. And Moshe gets a role because he demands it. He's not happy being left out of it. But Hashem says, I don't want you doing this. I want others doing this. So you'll have a show of doing it, but the Torah itself is going to say, Hukam HaMishkan. It wasn't really Moshe putting it up. It was done on his behalf so that people will understand that there are these different realms, and the one who does this, does that. The one who does that, doesn't do this. You know, that kind of idea. I like that idea. That's, yeah, take it or leave it, but I like it. Thank you. So, if anyone wants to ask the questions they were going to ask, just have a minute or two.
Yeah, what do you say about Olam Moed? There's two Olam Moed?
Yes.
And Olam Moed existed before the Mishnah?
Yes. That's pretty clear in the Chumash.
I know, I never thought of that.
Yeah. There are also two Aronos, but that's a separate problem. You have an Aron when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai with the Luchas the second time.
That's an Aron?
Yeah.